Welcome to Fresh Research, a podcast from the nonprofit Times. We explore some of the most interesting and sometimes provocative findings focused on the world of nonprofits. Thanks for tuning in. Here at the nonprofit Times, we see tons of great, fresh research. So in each episode, we take a recent study or survey and have a conversation with the authors about what they found and why they think it's important for charities. We'll also give away some books and give you access to other valuable information from the nonprofit Times.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Harivna for the Nonprofit Times. In this episode, we talk to John List, the Kenneth C. Griffin Distinguished Service Professor at the University of Chicago, about his study, Do Appeals to Donor Benefits Raise More Money Than Appeals to Recipient Benefits? Evidence from a Natural Field Experiment with Pick, Click, Give. List collaborated with three others on the study, James Murphy and Alexander James, both of the University of Alaska at Anchorage, and Michael Price of the University of Alabama. In Alaska, residents can choose to donate in increments of $25 when they file for their permanent fund dividend. Pick, Click, Give is the charitable contributions program associated with that. The study randomly allocated the state's roughly 290,000 households into either a control group or one of two groups that received a postcard promoting Pick, Click, Give. Both postcards included slogans designed to reflect two main motives for charitable giving. One highlighted the benefits to self with the message, warm your heart. The other highlighted benefits to others through the message, make Alaska better for everyone. Let's find out what the research found with John List. So tell me about this study. How did this study come about? Where did you guys get the idea for this?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the academic side, there's been a lot of work in which economists are focused on trying to determine the where's, why's, and when's of charitable giving. And through the research process, sort of two major hypotheses have arisen that try to explain why people give. And one is called warm glow, which would be defined as I give because it makes me feel good, versus altruism. Now, altruism has been a concept that has been around for a long time. Economists think of altruism as I give to help others primarily. So you have these two hypotheses out there, and economists have for years tried to explore which combination of these two hypotheses are actually explaining individual giving patterns. And it just so happened that the state of Alaska was interested in trying to stimulate greater giving in their Pick, Click, and Give, which is basically a permanent fund dividend charitable contribution program. And we partnered with them to both explore scientifically why people give and also to try to stimulate giving to their program.
And so the results were that the folks who received appeals focusing on donor benefits were more likely to give and gave more than those who were pitched with the recipient benefits. Is that right?
Yeah. So when you look at the experiment, we had about 300,000 households in the experiment, and we divided those 300,000 households into three groups. One was a control group, which just received the typical postcard from Alaska. And the other two were, one was called Benefits to Self, which was a postcard which was identical to the control group, but it focused on the benefits that you would receive yourself from giving. And the third group, which we called Benefits to Others, which was essentially make Alaska better for everyone. And we essentially put these 300,000 households into one of these three groups, and we simply looked at which of the groups performed the best in terms of how many people gave and also how much did they give. And what we find is that the Benefits to Self was a group that performed the best in terms of giving.
And can you put some some numbers behind that in terms of just was it average gift was higher or more likely to give?
Absolutely. So when you look at the total donations, what we observe is we bring in about $3 million in donations from the individuals. But when you compare the three groups, what we find is that those households who received the Warm Your Heart message or the Benefits to Self message, they were about 5% more likely to give. And their contributions were about 20% larger than the control group. So really what we're talking about is hundreds of thousands of dollars more in the Benefits to Self group versus a control group.
Yeah, 20% is significant. I mean, if you put that in context, like for example, if somebody in the recipient benefits group gave $100, in theory, the person receiving the donor benefit would have given 120 on average. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And if you look at then the process of, well, John, what would have happened had you sent the Benefits to Self message to all the households in the state? If you add it all up, we would have increased giving by about $500,000. So just by changing the contents of the postcard that Alaskan officials typically send, you know, you're talking about a little more than $500,000 more in raised funds.
Do you think this the results of this kind of warrant fundraisers to just stick with the sort of Warm Your Heart donor benefit message?
I think so. I think what this suggests to me is you should, first of all, I think it shows the value of science or the value of a field experiment in exploring, you know, what works with your donor base. Now, I think it also tells you that, you know, this messaging might have just worked for Alaskans and maybe it doesn't work for anyone else. That's why I want to highlight that we have an interesting message that worked for all of Alaska. We think that other people should test it, and it's at least worth testing to see if your particular donor base is also responsive to such a message. Now, that said, it is consistent with a theory of warm glow. So after seeing our data and also seeing the wealth of data from other experiments that we've run for the last 20 years, I would predict that this type of message would be very useful for all of your listeners to try. Now, can I guarantee 20% more each time? No, I can't. But what I could say is this is certainly worth giving a try to see if your donor base was as responsive as Alaskans were to the Warm Your Heart type of campaign idea that we use there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's always going to be variables, I would imagine. For instance, this study took place a few years ago when you mailed out the postcards. Was there anything that may have impacted the campaign that particular year, like a big disaster or anything like that, or any sort of economic type of effect?
No, I think that's a good question about whether you have everything accounted for. Now, remember, we did this as an experiment, so the control group is also receiving these letters in the same year. So if there's something like a catastrophe, Hurricane Katrina, you know, Australian wildfires, these will also be captured in the control group. So if overall giving is up in our year 2014, it will also be up in the control group, which in our year it wasn't. But I think that's always important to understand that is there something else going on that could have caused your messaging to work in 2014 where it won't work today. And as far as we know, there wasn't. Now that said, what we also find is that there is a long run impact to our treatment. And what I mean by that is, as you point out, we have a result in 2014, but we also observe giving in 2015 where we took away our campaign, and we did this on purpose. We wanted to explore whether the messaging itself had longer run effects And what we observe is that those people who received the Warm Your Heart message in 2014 were more likely to give and provided larger contributions in 2015 as well. So there's a sense that the messaging not only affected 2014, but it had spillover effects in 2015 too.
That's interesting. Would there be anything to explain that other than just the previous campaign?
Yeah, as far, you know, we can't determine or find any other reasons why that may have happened beyond the campaign. So right now, you know, we have a lot of research over the years that has explored whether effects of the experiment are longer term. And, you know, sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. And this one just feels like once you tweak or remind people of the warm glow, that it does have an impact not only in that particular year, but the year later as well. So what we find is sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And in this particular case, it does seem to stick.
And do you expect to do any sort of a follow-up study or continue to track it longer term?
Yeah, we want to continue to explore different permutations of this messaging. So if any listeners are interested in partnering, we have ideas on, you know, different permutations or different ideas around warm glow. Like, for example, one thing that came up in our data is that the effectiveness of our warm glow nudge, that actually waned over time for warm list people, but for cold list people, it was actually much more persistent. So what I mean by a warm list is that those are people who consistently give to the pick, click, and give campaign, where cold list people the previous year had not given. So what it looks like is that the warm glow message seems to have a persistent long run effect for cold list givers, but it really wanes for warm list donors. And I think that's something we'd like to explore more to figure out why that happened, because we really have no good idea why that happened in our data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you make a good point too about earlier when you talk about Alaska being maybe different. I mean, just like any other parts of the country might have different sorts of values or import to them. They may give to different causes or for different reasons. So it's always good to test on your own.
Right. I think that's a part of it that a lot of people, you know, don't realize. So first of all, science is science, and that gives you good indications. But when you look at charitable fundraising, there are a lot of different causes and a lot of different people, and they're giving for different reasons. You know, everyone is their own unique person. And many times we want to categorize people all into one bin, but it's after you observe these scientific results, it's really important to explore them in a scientific study of your own to make sure that your donor base are also responding to the same sorts of variables and inducements that, in this particular case, that Alaskans are responding to. You know, because I think it's fair to say that the two most vexing questions for fundraisers are how to attract donors and how to keep existing donors committed to their cause. And this all comes down to what are the underlying motivations for why people are giving to your particular cause. And there might be a myriad of reasons. And I think science is what gives you those reasons in actual data. So I think that's a really important message for your listeners to take home.
For sure. And what were some of the other findings from the report? I think there was something about finding that the women and those over 50 were more likely to give. Was that controlled for as well, or were they represented more in the demographics?
Yeah, that's a good point. When you look at heterogeneities in our data, and what I mean by that is, you know, are there differences across people? And one way to splice people is to look at gender or age. And what we find in our data is that both women and those donors over the age of 50, they were more likely to give, and they provided larger gifts than others, which is sort of an interesting result in that this is kind of a unique setting. in that women and older people tend to give more. Now, that said, those people were not more responsive to our treatment. So if you look at the people who were more responsive to treatment, the biggest heterogeneity we found is that coldless people tended to respond more than warmless people to the warm your heart messaging.
We'll be back with more about the difference in messaging over time right after this.
If you like what you're hearing, share it with friends and colleagues on social media. Use the hashtag #FreshResearch or retweet the Nonprofit Times link, and you'll be eligible to win a book from the NPT Library. Another way for folks to find the show, rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're interested in nonprofit events and news, then consider checking out the Whole Whale podcast. For over 5 years, we've covered topics related to marketing, technology, and communications in the social impact space. Recently, we've covered things like tackling Facebook fundraising, why you shouldn't build that mobile app, and why right now is the best time to start your capital campaign. So find us using the Whole Whale on whatever podcast app that you choose to use.
Welcome back. We're talking with John List of the University of Chicago. Were there any parts of the study or any findings that you would take with a grain of salt? Like, were there any shortcomings that you, in this report, that you would tell folks that you can't quite make a distinction on?
Yeah, I think the one thing that you can see in our report that is a shortcoming is that the manner in which we put people into groups, you know, we had one of, you know, households are put into one of three groups. We had to randomize at the zip code level. So what I mean by that is we had to put people in groups based on the zip code that they were in. And when you do something like that, it's possible that the groups themselves are different in some way. And in our particular experiment, how they were different is that some of the groups had people who in the past had given more money. And in our particular experiment, the treatment where it was warm your heart or benefits to self, in the previous year, those people had given more money than had the people in the control group and the benefits to others. So what you have to do in that case is you have to take account of their previous giving patterns when you analyze the data. So in our particular case, you can't just look at the giving rates in 2014 and compare them. You have to adjust it for what people gave in 2013. And when you make those adjustments, we still find really strong results. But the results would have been even stronger had the groups been comparable in 2013. So I think that was one of the, because of the manner in which we had to put people into groups because of the constraint that the state gave us, that caused us to have to adjust using a statistical analysis after the experiment. And we couldn't just look at the average donations of 2014.
And if I could go back to the people 50 and older, you mentioned women and those 50 and older were more likely to give and provided larger average gifts. Do you have any context for that in terms of how much more prevalent they were to give or how much higher gift?
Yeah, absolutely. So you should first step back and say, is this type of result consistent with the previous literature? And what's sort of interesting is we're looking at IRS data right now. So we have access to all of the IRS data across the entire U.S. And what we find is that across nearly every income bucket, so what I mean by that is that, you know, for all those people who make between $50,000 and $55,000, for example, what you find is that women give more money to charitable organizations than men do, which is sort of kind of interesting because most of the time people believe that men give more than women, but when you adjust for income, they actually don't. Women give more than men in the IRS data, and more mature people or older people tend to give more money than the younger people as well in the IRS data. Now, when you look at our data, what you find is that, again, there are marked differences in generosity across men and women. So, for example, when you look at the baseline, women are much more likely to give, 5 to 10% more likely to give, and their average contributions are higher than men as well. So the result across gender is that women are more likely to give, and they give significantly more than men. And you have the exact same result for those above 50. They're more likely to give, and conditional on giving, they give more as well. So what's kind of interesting is you have the same sort of data pattern across the entire U.S. that we observe in Alaska.
And what other findings should nonprofits or fundraisers take away from this study? Was there anything else that was kind of under the radar or maybe a subheadline of what you found out?
Yeah, I think the main thing is you know, fundraisers are facing these two questions of how do we expand the donor base and how do we keep our donors engaged? I think what our study highlights is that the targeted message approach with normative appeals can work, but you have to be very careful in exploring the framing of those messages in that the framing can appeal to certain group types. And what I mean by that is to expand the donor base or to get the coldest people to give, it's very clear from our data that the nudge of benefits to self is extremely profitable for the solicitor. And in doing that, you should look for heterogeneities to see if these messages are affecting one type more than the other. And once you do that, I think you have a better understanding of your donor base, and future fundraising drives can be scientifically driven from actual data rather than gut feelings that the solicitor has or the manager has. So in that way, if you kind of come at this problem from, well, we have warm glow on the one hand, we have altruism on the other, and these are good places to start, but then we want to scientifically explore what are the motivations of our donors. I think using messaging in postcards or messaging in phone-a-thons or messaging in your door-to-door campaign, I think these are all useful ways to explore how science can help you advance your goals as a fundraiser.
Well, great, John. Thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem at all. And if you have any more questions, just let me know.
That's John List. He's the Kenneth C. Griffin Distinguished Service Professor at the University of Chicago. And the recent study he talked about was, do appeals to donor benefits raise more money than appeals to recipient benefits? Evidence from a natural field experiment with Pick, Click, Give. I'm Mark Rivna for the Nonprofit Times. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Fresh Research.
That's our episode for today. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to share the Fresh Research link on Twitter or Facebook to be eligible to win something from the NPT Library. You can also share on social media with the hashtag #FreshResearch. And if you like what you hear, please rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. This has been Fresh Research, a podcast from the Nonprofit Times, spotlighting research and trends in the philanthropic sector. Till next time, keep up with us at thenonprofittimes.com for all your nonprofit news.